Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on CSNBayArea.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Maiocco.
This edition of the 49ers Insider Podcast comes to you from Orlando, Florida, the University of Central Florida. That's where the 49ers are practicing for 4 days this week before they head up north to a much different climate to face the Chicago Bears. And we're going to talk to Phil Dawson, the 49ers kicker, Uncle Phil, as he's affectionately known around the team. We'll talk about his detailed approach to his craft, including his weather forecasting skills, which he will need this weekend. Phil Dawson, he ranks 10th all-time in field goals made with an accuracy percentage higher than anybody else ahead of him. So Phil Dawson coming up now on the 49ers Insider Podcast. Well, Phil, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thrilled to be here.
Really thrilled? Are you thrilled to be in Orlando? I mean, this is kind of a weird thing. Late in the season, the team gets away. What's this like for you?
It's pretty neat, you know, change of scenery, just change things up a little bit. You know, late in the year, things can get a little monotonous at times, and so I think it's a good opportunity for the team to get away and spend some time together and just kind of change up that routine, so hopefully it translates in a victory this Sunday.
Is it different? You know, some of the guys who have their families in the Bay Area, wife and kids, but every week is kind of like that for you.
Yeah, you know, I kind of chuckle. I hear some of the guys talking about how they miss their family after 3 or 4 days. I said, try 5 months, and then you can come talk to me. But I appreciate that. I mean, we got guys who are close with their family and miss that time with them. But it's also a great opportunity for us to spend time together, you know, usually at home when the workday's over, everybody goes their different ways. And this week, we're all in the hotel together. So it's just an opportunity to sit down, maybe have a meal with a guy that you don't usually get to talk to or get to know somebody in a different way. So that's all good.
And what has it been like for you? I mean, to be playing for the Browns late in your career and now with the 49ers and have your family back home, wife and three kids back home in Texas.
You know, it's not ideal. If you would have ever told me years ago that I would do this alone with my family a long way away, I would have said no way. I'm kind of that old-fashioned family guy, you know, white picket fence, dogs running around the yard, out working in the yard and doing family things. But that's just kind of how it's worked out for us. And fortunately, I've got a great family at home that makes the most and makes the best out of this situation. And then obviously when the off season rolls around, I get 7 months to get caught up and slap those kids around, make sure they're toeing the line. So it we've made the best of it, but it's definitely not something we set out to do a long time ago.
How many games are they able to come to during the course of a season?
My wife will come to almost all the home games with two boys playing now. Early in the year, we had a Monday night game and a Thursday night game she could make because my boys were playing. But other than that, she's at every game. And then the kids generally make it out during the holidays. So that's, like I said, it's not A1, but we make the most of it.
I mean, at 41 years old, do you think, like, it's year to year for you? Pretty much, I remember at the end of last year, you were talking about you'll assess it at the end of the year. Is that how you're taking it as you head into 2017 as well?
Absolutely. My goal coming into this season was to perform in such a way that the Niners would want me back, and then I would go home and sit down with my family and see where we are and are we going to collectively, you know, dive in and do this thing again. And so my focus right now is finishing up strong these last five games, and hopefully when it's all said and done, the Niners will want me back, and then I'll go home and go through the same decision-making process I have the last couple of years.
Well, I have a theory, but first off, kind of to set that up, the extra points being moved back to the 15-yard line, 33-yard field goal is basically what it is, a one-point field goal. You don't like that at all. Can you explain why you don't like it?
Well, it's just I've always viewed extra points kind of like an and one in basketball. The offense does the hard work. They drive the lane. They go up. They get fouled. They make the basket. They do all the hard stuff, and now you get rewarded for making the shot after a foul. And so you go to the free throw line. You get a chance to make it even better. And so that's how I've always viewed an extra point. You know, the offense does the hard work. They grind down the field. They put a touchdown on the board, and now you get rewarded for your hard, you know, hard work and get a chance to go out there and add to it. You know, with a 33-yarder, it's still a high percentage kick. Most guys, I know it's well documented some of the struggles, but still on average, I mean, it's a high percentage kick. But it's definitely not a reward. I mean, it requires your full attention, especially on a sudden score where you're not in your rhythm and in routine like you are leading up to a field goal, especially late in the year where, you know, nothing can you take for granted when you're on a bad field or in a bad condition kind of day. So it's no longer a reward. I mean, it's a test. And so, you know, I remember watching the AFC Championship game last year, and New England misses a first quarter PAT, and that haunted them the whole game. And so on one hand, I can see the decision makers wanted to add more spice to that play, and it certainly has done that. But for someone like me who views an extra point as a reward for scoring a touchdown, it's not always the case.
Well, my vantage point is that it puts more value on somebody like you who's accurate. I mean, I think you can find a kicker at, you know, every college program, almost every high school program that can make an extra point, but you move that thing back and it really makes you more important, especially one of the more accuracy, more, you know, highest accuracy kickers that there's been out there. I think it can prolong your career for as long as you want to kick. I think there should be a job for you.
What do you charge for an agent fee? Well, you might be right on that. And then the rule change to kickoffs, I think, has helped a guy like me as well. Just, you know, I'm getting an opportunity to be back on the field and do different things with the ball and the kickoffs. And, you know, the days of just hauling off and whacking it through the back, you know, there's an increasing number of teams deciding to do different things with the kickoff, and so that's been fun as well. So, like I said, we can sit here and hypothesize about what all this means, but, you know, my goal is just go help my team every time I go on the field, try to put together a solid season. When it's all said and done, hopefully they'll want me back.
But it's interesting. You weren't drafted. You came in with the Raiders, waived during training camp in favor of Greg Davis. Is that right? And then you went to the Patriots. And, I mean, I don't know how many practice squad kickers are out there, but there aren't very many.
Yeah, it was a great opportunity for me. It certainly wasn't my first choice. I was hoping and expecting to be drafted, but when that didn't happen, I went the free agent route, wound up in New England, and got a chance to sit behind Adam Vinatieri the entire season and watch how he competed, watch how he handled the difficult elements. You know, a kid growing up in Texas, I had never kicked in the cold and certainly didn't face the kinds of environments that you face late in the year in the NFL. So that was a great learning experience for me. Adam was going to be a free agent at the end of that year, and I think what the Patriots were thinking was if they lost him, they had a guy, you know, on the on-deck circle. And when free agency started, he was literally on an airplane to Cleveland to sign with the new expansion Browns. I was in New England trying to figure out how to make that work there, and Adam changed his mind, stayed in New England. I went to Cleveland, and that's how it all worked out.
So Dwight Clark signed you?
Yes, he did.
Have you seen Dwight much around?
Yeah, I've seen him, and, you know, I joke with him, man, you had an eye for talent. But, yeah, it was, with a bunch of old, they called it the 49ers East, that organization back on the expansion Browns. You had Mr. Policy running the show as well, so you had him and Dwight out there, and those guys were good to me.
And, I mean, you're ranked 10th right now, all-time field goals, and of those guys in the top 10, you have the highest accuracy percentage, just a few notches above Adam Vinatieri. Do you guys stay in contact, and what did you learn from him, maybe from a mental standpoint, during that time when you were on the practice squad?
I've admired him from day one, and you know, when I was with him, with all due respect to him, he wasn't the Adam Vinatieri that everyone thinks of now. I mean, obviously, future Hall of Famer, Super Bowl winning kicks. I mean, he hadn't done all that yet. He was still a young guy trying to establish himself in the league. But even then, I knew that he had it. And I watched the way he competed. And that's the number one thing. I took many things from him, but the number one thing I took from him was how he rose to the occasion. The tougher the environment, the more that was on the line, the more his team needed him, he showed up. And it wasn't just field goals. I remember him running down, making tackles on kickoffs and just being a competitor. And so I made it. That kind of fit with how I wanted to go about my career. I never really wanted to be a kicker, but that's just how it turned out. But I figured I would still approach kicking the way I would as a football player. And that was what Adam did, and so I owe a lot of that to him.
I mean, I see you as a guy who goes out between quarters, and you're checking out the field, and I'm sure that the wind or whatever. Are you, as a kicker, are you ever in danger of overthinking things, or are you somebody who just you want to know all the information and kind of sift out what's usable and what's not?
I've always viewed it as part of my job. You know, I don't necessarily, while there's things I have to know about my opponent, it's not near what, you know, Joe Staley has to know. But since I don't have a physical human being across from me that I have to study, I figure the conditions are my opponent. And so whether it's footing, whether it's wind, whether it's whatever, I feel like that's my job. And I need to collect as much information as possible to come up with a game plan, how I'm going to get my job done that day. And so that's how I've always approached it. That's some of that wanting to be a football player maybe coming out. I'm still going to put the work in, even though, quote, my workload may be less than a position player. And I just want to feel prepared when I go out on the field. And some of it's my personality, too. I don't like surprises. You know, I don't want to run out on the field and be like, oh, wow, the wind's doing this, or, oh, wow, the field's this. You know, I want to, as much as I can, know what I'm getting myself into, and I feel like it gives me the best chance to do my job.
I have a feeling you're going to be getting yourself into quite a challenge on Sunday. Last I checked, what was it here? I just saw this. High of 37, mixture of rain and snow showers at Soldier Field. How closely are you following what you might be able to expect on Sunday?
Well, AccuWeather is a little different than weather.com, but you're right. It's tracking lower each day. You know, about a week ago, I started glancing at it, and as we get closer, the temperature keeps coming down, and the chance of snow keeps going up. So that'll be something that I continue to monitor. Soldier Field is notorious for being a tough place to kick because of the wind and the field itself. The footing is pretty poor.
Especially late in the season, right?
Correct. So when you add snow and moisture to the equation, it's going to be one of those days. And there's a fine line. I mean, you need to have conversations with your coaches and let them know, be honest with them about the difficulty. But you got to be able to do that without it affecting your confidence to go out and get the job done. So, you know, I've tried to have those conversations early in the week. Be brutally honest with the coaches. Hey, what normally may be true may not necessarily be true this week. And I try to get that all out of the way so that as we get closer to the game, it's all about making the kick.
And last year, it seemed like the Bears kicker struggled. Is it almost better from a mental standpoint as a visiting player, knowing that you only have to deal with it this one time, and once you get it out of the way, you return home?
Well, for most of my career in Cleveland, I thought that exact thing. I thought how nice it was, you know, that these guys got to pop into Cleveland, just put up with it one day, and then leave. And, in fact, I can't tell you how many guys came up to me after games and said that exact thing. Boy, is it great. I only have to kick here one time.
Were they trying to get in your head?
No, this is after the game. But, you know, I can remember saying, good grief, I have to play here 8 times. So table's been turned a little bit. I am grateful that I only have to do this once. But, you know, every week has its challenges. I mean, we're in sunny, beautiful Miami last week where you would think everything was perfect. And it was one of the tougher fields I've kicked on in a while. So you just never know exactly what you're getting yourself into. And each and every day, each and every kick requires your full attention.
It seems like, you know, obviously one of the storylines for the first year of Levi Stadium and early last year was the field conditions. Have they figured that out? Are you satisfied now with how that field plays for you?
They've done a great job. It's well documented, the struggles early on, and that's all died down. The field's been great. and it's becoming more and more consistent. And obviously, for reasons we've already talked about, I like that. I like knowing what I'm getting myself into. You know, those early games, you just never really knew what you're walking into, and so it really didn't feel much like a home field advantage. Well, now it's becoming much more predictable, much more consistent, and now I know what to expect going out there, and I like that.
Do you have superstitions? I mean, it seems like I've met kickers in the past who didn't like to talk about streaks or didn't like to talk about accuracy. Are you like that?
Not really. I'm a big routine guy, but I don't view that as a superstition. You know, I kind of have a real dry wit and sense of humor, and I'll talk about, oh, I hope I don't hit one sideways coming up. So I'm definitely not one of these guys that's super positive self-talk and ignores the obvious. So I just try to be honest and go out there and do the best I can, and don't have time for superstitions.
Well, one of the well-known kickers of the 49ers past, Ray Wershing, in the 80s, had something where he would come down onto the field for field goal attempts or extra points and just keep his head down and only focus on between the hash marks, kicking it between the hash marks. You obviously don't do that. Can you see why Ray Wershing would have done that? And how do you measure up a field goal?
No, I can totally see why he would do that. I mean, each guy kind of knows what he needs to do to be in his sweet spot. And you know, I remember Greg Davis, who beat me out in Oakland, he wore earplugs. He didn't want to hear anything. So I mean, he's out on the sideline during the game, and I mean, it was really hard to communicate with him because he had earplugs in. So everybody's kind of got their own little thing, and that goes for all positions, by the way. It's not just kickers. But you know, for me, I'd pick a target. I'm not looking at the uprights. I want to kick the ball to a specific spot, and then my alignment is based off that target. And, you know, the target's not always down the middle. In extreme cases, sometimes the target isn't even behind the goalpost. I mean, you have to play the wind to such a degree that so there's a wide variability in how you line up each and every kick. So for me, it's draw a target, base your alignment off that target, and then I use the hash marks as little visual aids as I approach the ball.
There was a game at, not to play Soldier Field's conditions, but there was a game, you know, it's probably
hit one sideways,
yes,
turned it for a touchdown. Yeah, I was playing in Cleveland that same day, and we were having snow with that wind, so I can remember seeing the highlights that night, and I felt Joe's pain because I was kicking them sideways myself that day.
Have you ever lined up a kick so that you're aiming outside the goalpost?
We were playing Buffalo in a blizzard, and I aimed from the right hash. I aimed halfway between the left upright and the left pylon and made the kick. So there's some extreme days. You know, as a general rule, I tell kickers don't ever aim outside the uprights. But here and there, you're going to have just an extreme weather day where you have no choice.
Phil, you were team MVP last year, winning the Bill Walsh Award. Could you have ever expected in your NFL career to be named the team MVP?
You know, I don't know about as a 49er. I got it my last year in Cleveland, and I almost felt like that was more of a culmination of years of service and kind of a pat on the back as I was leaving. And then to come here and kind of start over, and for people not to really know me, and for me not to know anyone, I just kind of put my head down and went to work. And so when it happened last year, it really meant a lot to me. Obviously, I said at the time, any award with Coach Walsh's name to it is a big deal. One of the legendary figures in the history of the National Football League. And the fact that it was voted on by my coaches meant a tremendous amount to me. So it was a huge honor. I did have a moment where I was surprised. But it motivated me to dive into my off-season preparations last year and give it all I could so that I could hopefully come back this year and live up to that award.
After your 400th field goal, you talked about what it meant to see your teammates rally around you and come out, and I saw Kyle Nelson sprint the length of the field to get that football. And you said it shows you're not just a weird kicker. Were you ever a weird kicker?
I hope not. There may be somebody somewhere that's got a story on me, but you know, I grew up playing football and can remember, you know, my mom and dad and my little brother would come up after practice and everyone would leave, and we would be the four people on the field, and I would stay late to kick. There was no kicking during practice. You know, I was out there doing playing other positions, and so it's a family deal to me. It's a way that I've been able to continue my career, and I just feel blessed to have the opportunity to still get to play football. I mean, not many 5'11", 205-pound, gray-haired, bald white dudes get to play in the NFL when they're almost 42, and that's all because I can kick a ball. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity, and I value my time with my teammates and my coaches, and I just try to be one of the guys.
How do you like the nickname Uncle Phil?
Oh, that's fine. You know, I had to ask my boys what it meant, and they said that's a term of endearment, and so I'll take it, and hopefully I told people with any more gray hair it might be Great Uncle Phil here pretty soon.
As long as it's not Grandpa Phil.
Well, hey, if I'm lucky enough to still be kicking, then that'd be great too.
Was that Torrey Smith who gave that nickname?
He was the first one, and then as with everything else, QP exaggerated it, and so, you know, it's everywhere now.
It's everywhere. Well, hey, I really appreciate the time you're spending here on this trip to Orlando, and I have one last question for you. Obviously, you've been to every NFL city except for probably L.A., which you will do on Christmas Eve. Is there one road trip, you know, when the schedule comes out, you look and you say, oh, I can't wait to get there for whatever reason, a restaurant or family or anything?
Green Bay. I absolutely love Green Bay, the history there, and I'm pretty old school, like I mentioned before. When you're on the field in Green Bay and you look up in the stands, you still see families. You see, it's well known, you know, you pass on season tickets there from one generation to the other and the waiting list and all that. And so you'll see a mom and a dad or a granddad and grandkids. And as a result, the environment itself is pretty wholesome. Some of these places you go these days, unfortunately, it gets pretty rough. And it wouldn't be a place you'd want to take your 10-year-old daughter to. Yet Green Bay, I could see you taking the whole family, having a great experience. And that's the NFL I choose to remember as fond to me.
And the frozen tundra isn't frozen?
Well, we went there in the playoffs, and it was frozen that day. But even then, to be able to play in Lambeau in January in a playoff game, you know, with it 0 degrees, I mean, as a kid growing up loving football, I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, what was that kick like?
Praise the Lord, it went in. You know, that's one of those days that you just kind of have to figure out what you're going to do. You can throw technique and all that out the window. And, you know, these kicking camps that all these young kickers go to, and they learn this technique and they hit all these great balls and all, you can throw that all out the window. You're a member of a football team playing in 0 degree weather with no grass on the field, and you better figure out how to get the ball up and heading in the right direction, and you're not going to be able to use any of the techniques you've been taught at these camps in the off season. And so, as someone who loves to compete and be just a football player, one of the guys, I loved it.
Hey, Phil, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
And a big thanks to Phil Dawson for carving out some time here in Orlando, Florida, to sit down on the 49ers Insider podcast. He was the Bill Walsh Award winner, the team MVP last year. Might he get that award once again this year? Once again, Phil Dawson. And thanks so much for listening to the 49ers Insider Podcast. It's available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on csnbayarea.com.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.